Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Well, today I am joined by India White, and she is the founder of Portac. And Portac is an audience intelligence agency, and you guys help brands and agencies understand their audiences on a cultural level. So, yeah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Really pleased that you took the time to join me. I'm very interested in what we're going to talk about today, and you know, leveraging audience intelligence is absolutely fundamental for today's marketers and PR comms professionals, right?
That's right, especially in this COVID pandemic world where more and more people are online on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it also helps us to understand a lot more about the influencers and what influences them and the kind of media that they consume, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, not really a new way, it's been around for a while, but a great way for us to dive into the data that we have available to us today. To better understand audiences beyond demographics. So beyond what we've been relying on for so long, broad assumptions and predetermined segments, to then understand our audiences through who they truly are. So, you know, I'm a female in my 30s and I'm married, but I don't have children. I do have a dog. But I still get ads for Pampers and stuff like that. So understanding our audiences and being able to communicate with them and reach them and engage them through their passions, interests, and by understanding the culture of the audience segments that exist in our target markets.
Right. Got you. So, I mean, brands are always trying to resonate better with their customers, right? So obviously the customers need to feel connected and the sense of trust, right, with the companies they buy from. But how do brands get a more of a fundamental understanding of who their customer segments are beyond the demographics and assumptions and these predetermined media segments that you were talking about?
Yeah, so I mean, traditionally, we've relied on market research methods to do that in the past, so to get a better understanding of our markets, which are still valuable, but by the time we are able to do that type of research, a lot has changed. You know, it's still definitely important to talk to our customers and do surveys and do customer discovery to better understand specifically how our customers engage and understand how they use our product or service and benefit from it. But when it comes to what we do at Portac, we leverage audience intelligence software, so like Affinio and Audience, to better understand audiences through their interests. So to explain what those platforms do, just to give a better understanding of what we mean by audience intelligence. So each of those platforms have very powerful algorithms that look at audiences as a whole, so social audiences, and let's use Twitter as an example. So for instance, we could look at the following of a brand's audience or a competitor's audience, and the algorithms will look at every single person that exists within that audience and then look at who those people follow. So you know, I only follow things that I'm interested in, and you can make that assumption about everybody out there. And then these algorithms have powerful segmenting or clustering abilities to then group people based on similar following patterns or interest patterns. So what you're left with is custom and unsupervised segments within your audience that are based on passions, their interests, who they trust, all of that stuff. So then you can dive in deep into each of those clusters, understand the celebrities that they follow, the subject matter experts, thought leaders, all of that, the media that they follow, the publications that they read, and who are the community leaders within their own sort of culture and audience, and start to analyze the content that they regularly read and consume and share, and how they talk to each other, understand the vernacular that's unique to these audience segments, so that then you can start to build audience or marketing strategies around this fundamental understanding of who your audience is beyond demographics.
Right. I've got you. Yeah, it's something I've been sort of studying a little bit as well from a content point of view, because we write a lot of content and create videos and podcasts. So, you know, getting to know an audience and a specific segment is so important, right? But I like the fact that actually these segments are floating. I mean, they're not always the same, are they? I mean, when you delve into it, there's so much data there that actually, I mean, I looked into audience, and you know, I use that tool as well. It helps with a lot of things that we're working on, and it's amazing. There's so much information in there that it becomes so useful for us to actually look at, you know, what periodicals and magazines and newspapers and you know, what TV channels people watch and, you know, who they talk to. But what was very interesting when we were just speaking off camera is what you were saying about 10% of the people are quite vocal, right? And there's obviously the 90% of people don't really talk very much, so online. So they will follow a brand, or they'll follow people, or they'll follow topics or hashtags or whatever, but they won't say very much. And, you know, we were just saying how it gives us a kick, right? When we can create a piece of content that will make them message, you know, the brand, or it will make them message the originator, like the influencer of that, with that piece of content. And I find that very interesting as well. So what more do you know about that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's not, you know, unknown, or maybe it's less well known, but we have for years. Like, I started my career at Radian 6, which it was a social media listening company. And back then we were, you know, that was a decade ago, and we were teaching people the importance of listening to what people are saying online. Literally calling up some of the world's biggest companies and saying, you know, this is important. You need to be listening to what your people are saying online. Wow. But then over time, you know, you learn that it's really just the vocal minority that's talking. So when you're listening to those audiences, like if a PR crisis erupts, or you're getting feedback about your company or a situation that's happening, you have to take that with a grain of salt, because it is the vocal minority. It's not representative of your entire audience. So the vast majority of your audience are lurkers. They're people that don't engage regularly. They don't, you know, communicate with you. They're not commenting on your posts. They're not liking and sharing. They're not freely sharing how much they love their new Yeti mug or whatever it might be. You know, but they are people that could be, you know, your most valuable audience segments. So how do you get to know them? These people that don't volunteer to be heard, don't volunteer to share their opinion. That's where audience intelligence gets really interesting, because we don't need somebody to talk to better understand who they are and what they're passionate about. So because, like I was describing how the segmentation or the clustering happens, it's through the social graph. It's through following patterns. It's through what we've elected to show as far as our interest goes. So the content piece in audience intelligence is almost layered on top. What's most interesting is the interest graph. So learning about people, whether they say something or not, through who they choose to follow and what their interests are. So you can see all that media, influencers, et cetera, to inform your marketing strategies without having people to engage. But what you were alluding to there is, you know, audience intelligence allows us to learn more and to sort of connect into that culture and the interests and passions of our audience, to then maybe pull these lurkers out of the dark and get them to engage with our content. If that's a goal, we don't necessarily need to force people out of their natural patterns, but you can create action just through better understanding who those people are through, you know, audience intelligence.
Yeah. And I mean, you sort of, we were talking a bit about culture, passions, interests, you know, what matters most to them, right? And yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, you've got a lot of experience, obviously, with social listening. Being at Radiant 6, you must know a huge amount about that. I mean, I've sort of studied the tools over the years, used Brand Watch for a while, and some, you know, lots of different tools. But I think, you know, actually working within social media for such a long time, you must have some real gems there, you know. So what you're trying to do then is discover the segments that are already within your audience, right, or competitor's audience, and shedding light on who and how you should be focusing your marketing, right? So you sort of mentioned to me earlier about identifying high value segments. So do you think they're more likely to be the people that will say nothing because they don't want to be discovered?
I think it really depends on the market that you're in and who you're targeting. Because obviously certain cultures that exist online are way more active than others. As an example, so audience intelligence, when I start with a new client, there's a few different things that we'll do depending on where they are with their knowledge of their audience. So if they have a presence online, then we'll run an analysis of their own audience. If they're, we do a lot of work with like B2B SaaS tech startups, that type of thing. So if it's a newer company and they're trying to learn about their target audience that they will be targeting once their product or service is complete, then we'll look at competitive audience analysis. So we'll look at the people and players that already exist to see who they're targeting. So a reflection of somebody's following, so their audience, is a reflection of their marketing, their efforts that they've already done to attract those audiences, or who are, is naturally attracted to their offering.
Yeah.
So that gives us a really good idea of the competitive audiences and identifies and proves out whether your assumptions are true about who your potential market might be. So that's just sort of getting started. And then we can start to identify what audiences would be sort of the low-hanging fruit, the easier ones to go after. So when I talk about high-value market segments, so there's a lot of definitions to that, but obviously these are the market segments that create the most revenue and are easiest to convert and please. But with audience intelligence, what I'm looking for is audience segments that have high degree of shared interest. So there's different qualities of clusters, I would say. Some clusters are kind of grouped together because they're the leftover people, and that's a very bad quality cluster. I wouldn't really even pay attention to it because there isn't one really common thing that brings them together. But with these platforms like Affinio and Audience, we are able to see the scores or how valuable these are. So a cluster with a high degree of shared interest is super interesting. And then if you layer on top the interconnectivity, so how likely the people in the cluster are to know each other or follow each other, that presents a really neat marketing opportunity. So it allows us to create marketing strategies to infiltrate. That's, I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, sort of inject yourself into these clusters and create action and grow your market in those audience segments. So maybe you already have that segment and you want to grow it. It allows you to learn about the culture so that then you can create marketing strategies that penetrate and sort of grow your presence and awareness within that segment. So for an example, I ran a test one time. We were trying to target or get into the sports marketing or sports business industry. And this was when I used to work at Affinio, actually. That's why I keep mentioning them. And we did a case study around it was a target market that we wanted to go after. We didn't have any customers in that market, but we identified an opportunity. So we did the research using the platform to identify these high value segments and found that the hashtags SM business or SM sports and sports biz, I think were the two, that they used to, you know, tag their posts and communicate with each other. And then we figured out some common theme that was going on. This was years ago. I don't fully remember what it was. And the main influencers or the main sort of thought leaders within that industry. And we created a piece of content that was tailored to the interests and passions of that particular cluster. And this is a B2B example. A lot of people don't normally think of this type of intelligence as a B2B play, but it certainly can be.
Yeah.
And so we built the content and then organically placed it into that cluster. So no paid purchase or media buyer or anything like that. And then immediately saw this like increase in followers from that segment. So for instance, when I analyze my audience on Twitter, I still have that cluster of sports business of people, which is a joke to anybody that knows me well, because I don't know anything about sports. So so that was a really interesting case study. But then the other thing with audience intelligence is it's really a discovery tool. So we were talking about how, you know, you can analyze your audience or a competitor's audience. There's a lot of examples where we work with people that they assume they know who their audience is, and they assume they know quite a bit about their customers, especially companies that have been in existence for a while and have a really good presence online. They have very sound assumptions around who their audience are.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting to run an analysis and discover who's in an audience. So a lot of examples around, like for example, there was athleisure company, so athletic wear, and they were targeting a younger demographic, so younger women. And that's what all of their marketing content was around. But when we analyzed their audience, we found that it was actually a very different demographic. It was more moms and females sort of later in their life that were active and health conscious, but they weren't seeing the engagement that they wanted to. And at the end of the day, that's likely why, because they were creating marketing collateral for the younger demographic, so university-aged women. But really who was buying their product was, you know, these women that either had young kids or, you know, were just staying healthy later in life, that actually have a much larger budget and, you know, are a higher value market segment than, you know, women that are younger. So that type of discovery was really powerful for them. And then not only discovering who's in your own audience, but discovering audience segments that are in your competitor's audience. So that allows you to identify audience segments that perhaps you haven't thought of and creates more market opportunity for you. I think you're muted.
Oh, sorry, I was muted there. Very much so. I find it very interesting because, you know, we're in the influencer marketing business ourselves, and actually going and looking at technology influencers is very, very interesting, because some of them are completely kosher. You know, they've never bought any followers. They've never done follow for follow, which is a hashtag that people use. You obviously know a lot about fake followers, I would imagine, after analyzing people's audiences. And you know, we find it quite disingenuous how, you know, some of these people can actually go and do that, and then big tech companies just hire them anyway, and they don't even know, or maybe they do know, but actually they don't care, or maybe I don't know. I'm kind of I'm a bit shocked about it, really, if I'm honest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think. So I also used to work at a tech company called InNetwork, which worked with in influencer marketing, and we paired brands with influencers, and yeah, and it was interesting because, so influencers that have a highly engaged audience that know what they talk about, know who they are, what their brand, their personal brand is, are the influencers that create the most action for your brand. You really have to have that pairing that makes a lot of sense in order to get the results that you're looking for. But it's amazing when, you know, you present a list of potential influencers And the brand immediately goes after those that have the most amount of followers.
Yes. And that's, so, a very interesting conversation.
Right. And that's the numbers game, right? So people are attracted to the larger numbers. They think it's more opportunity because you're reaching more people. But what I've learned is that's really not the case. For the most part, niche influencers or long tail influencers, micro influencers, whatever you want to call them, they actually create way more action and way more engagement than some of the biggest ones. And when you look at, like, when you're talking about fake followers, audience intelligence tools allow you to also audit the quality of an audience of an influencer. So for instance, you have, you're debating between going with, you know, one big influencer or 10 smaller ones. You can analyze the big influencer's audience and see, okay, well, how much of this audience is who I want to be targeting? And a lot of the time when you do that, you discover that a very small piece of their audience is who your target market actually is. And then, like you say, you can identify whether they have bought audiences or fake followers very easily. It's very easy to spot those clusters that are not real. And also there's a lot of, like I alluded to earlier, like low quality clusters that may be, you know, just completely outside of what you want to be targeting. So then you look at the niche influencers who you can identify through, you know, the interests of the target clusters, who may only have, you know, 10,000 followers or even less, and you see their audience and they're all exactly the target audience that you're looking for. And the engagement rate on their posts are typically much higher because they still have that unique trust with their audience. So I've written about that before, like the trust threshold. Once an influencer gets to a certain level where they are almost too big and some of their diehard followers from the beginning start to sort of question their motives, and you know, when you start getting a lot of paid sponsorships, that sort of trust level decreases a bit. They're still interested in following you and understanding what you're doing. But the people that organically exist and just share their thoughts and are thought leaders, you know, those people are the ones that the community leaders essentially are the ones that can get the most return for your investment as far as influencer marketing goes.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I can't believe it. I interviewed one of the most famous news readers of all time in the United Kingdom probably 3 months ago. And he had had a problem with his Twitter account, and unfortunately he said something wrong, and he got fired from the news company he was working for, and he deleted his account. But the thing is, he's got a new account now, and he's probably only got about, I mean, when I interviewed him, I think he had about 11,500 followers, and now he's got up to 15 in the space of 3 months. But his engagement is absolutely sick. I've never seen anything like it. If seriously, because he's, I mean, he covered the Berlin Wall. You're talking about someone who's been in the United Kingdom on the news since I was 5 years old or younger, and everyone knows his voice. And it's insane when you network with someone like that, because then when they mention you, you pick up lots of followers, and it becomes very interesting. And what I quite like is actually broadening out the audience from where it sort of, because I was kind of like, okay, I'm in cloud and I'm in business and I'm in leadership, and you know, a few of these segments that have been classified to me because I engage with people around those topics. Yeah. And I find it very interesting when I go and I look at a potential influencer that I'm looking to hire, because a brand says, oh, well, here's five. We really like these two. We'd like you to go and have a look, you know, go and hire them. And you go and you look at their clusters, which is what we're talking about. And the clusters represent engagements, right, between topics, yeah, and they between people around certain topics, right? That's a fair way to explain it, yeah? And I just find it very interesting how, you know, someone can be really influential, but yet because they don't engage very often, they haven't got an engaged audience. So it means that you're not necessarily going to get the best bang for your buck if you're doing just an organic campaign, right?
Yeah, being well known isn't the same as, you know, having that really tight following that does, you know, really trust you and really trust your word. There's plenty of people out there that are well known, but I would never take their advice.
Yes. And you can see that they're gaming a lot of things as well, you know, and it's yeah, it's a very interesting world, isn't it, out there?
Oh, definitely. It's like when we talk about the quality of audiences in surprises of who may be following you. So and why they follow you. We were doing some work with a stadium in the US, and they were interested in increasing their fan engagement. So fandom is a really interesting thing. And how to increase that and get diehard fans is a really interesting thing that there's a lot of, you know, companies out there that have a lot of budget behind them that are really trying to increase that fandom across the boards, not just sports. Gaming is a great example these days.
Yeah.
And gaming audiences are really interesting audiences to analyze, just as a sidebar. But we analyzed their audience and the stadium's audience, and what we learned that, you know, they expected to have a lot of, you know, sports fans from the team that was home there. And turns out that they had a lot of random music fans as a majority. And they were really surprised to see that. And it turned out that it was something that, you know, they had had a musical guest come in and do a concert, and something that the team behind the musician did gained them a lot of followers. So they actually had like a lot of teenager, like Bieber fans or One Direction fans or something like that. And they were one
classic.
Yeah, like they're putting out all this information about like attending their stadium and being, you know, a fan of whatever sports team plays there or sports teams. And they didn't realize that like 50% of their audience were teenage girls. So, yeah. So you need to know who you're talking to. And if you have an audience that you don't want, so for instance, that wasn't a high value audience to them. It wasn't who they were looking to target. So then how do you gain the audience that you want? And that's through, you know, analyzing maybe other stadiums or just related topics, related brands, finding the clusters that you want to go after, learning about them, building the strategies that you need to, engaging the people that you need to start building awareness and spreading your message within those clusters.
Yeah, and creating the content that resonates with them, right? I mean, you're big into like these high value segments, and I know you get excited about these segments, yeah, as I do actually. When I look at a load of clusters of an influencer, and I look at the topics that they engage with people on, and I'm like, okay, there might be an influencer that's got 25,000 followers, right? But I'll look at that influencer and I'll say, oh, that's really interesting. They in particular engage maybe 2,500 security, internet security people, for example, or you know, some kind of applications or something like this. And I get really excited about that, because 2,000 people engaging with that influencer around that particular topic is something that it's very valuable to a tech company, providing they're the right people, right? Because you can export that, can't you, into a list, and you can have a look at all those people, and then you can analyze them for the job roles and the age and the likelihood of them purchasing something through online advertising, or, you know, what their personality types are like. So then you can get to the point of saying, well, I like the idea of this piece of content. Okay, so what's the headline going to be around that piece of topic, around that, yeah? So then you look at them and you're like, okay, so say, as an example, like 75% of them like the National Geographic magazine, yeah? As an example, right? You could write something, you could have like, check out the lion's share of something. It could be just very simple adjustment, right, into that headline. And that excites me, actually, I must admit.
Yeah, you can go really... I'm glad you've got all that. Yeah, no, you can go really far into the weeds as far as what you can do with the data. And it just, like, once you get it and sort of see your audience segments and then relate them to what you're doing or what you're trying to do or where you're trying to grow, there's endless opportunities that you can leverage the data from. We get a lot of people that are like, oh, well, that's just Twitter data. Well, this is a massive focus group, essentially, that you've just pulled information from in an unsupervised, unbiased way, that you can then take all that data and translate it, not only across social networks, but across your other marketing initiatives. When you talk about, identifying sort of niche topics within an audience, it's really interesting because not only, and then with content. So that gives you an opportunity to expand your content calendar. You might be getting stale with your content ideas, happens to everybody. So it gives you a whole new like realm of content that you can explore or content themes that you can bring into your regular content pillars that you often talk about. So that's really exciting. Or just discover something completely new that you should be talking about that you haven't. So for instance, one of my favorite audiences that I analyze using audience intelligence is the Peanut Butter Co. So Peanut Butter Co. is a company in the States that produces, peanut butter, it's all natural, but they have a lot of different flavors. And my sister is a peanut butter fanatic. She used to, every time I'm in Canada and we have limited peanut butter options here, apparently. So every time a family member or somebody like that would go to the States, my sister would request Reese's peanut butter because she liked flavored peanut butter. And then I think they stopped making it, or maybe it was harder to get. So she explored different options and she found this Peanut Butter Co. That's where I got introduced to it. It's really good. Check it out. But when you analyze their audience, you expect maybe moms, grocery shoppers. I don't know, like what your assumptions would be around who would be in a peanut butter audience. And what's really interesting is that they have one of the best audiences that I've seen. They have the moms. They have couponers, and as a sidebar, there is a difference between couponers and sweepstakes clusters. They identify very differently when you segment them. But then you start to see like fitness enthusiasts. There was a bodybuilding cluster, very diehard bodybuilding cluster, ultra marathoners. So these are people that run, 100 miles through the woods. My husband actually does that. Wow. Oh yeah,
it's serious crazy stuff. Yeah.
And so there, and then you had the vegan food crowd as well, and then a yogi cluster as well. So all these clusters are very different. So their motivation for buying Peanut Butter and Co. peanut butter is very different. The vegans, are very interested in healthy food that aligns with their beliefs and how they eat. And then you have the bodybuilders who they're eating peanut butter for fuel, same as the ultra marathoners, but yep, how they relate to peanut butter is very different. Bodybuilders are probably consuming a lot of, I wouldn't know, I don't have massive muscles, but their diet is very important to them so that they can fuel their bodies. And then ultra marathoners, I'm more familiar with that. They're running these super long distances and they need something that's quick and easy to get the protein and the nutrition that they need. So for instance, my husband will have a banana with peanut butter wrapped in a little tortilla, and it's easy to sort of sneak down and when he stopped at one of the stops. So the motivation for each one of those clusters to purchase the Peanut Butter and Co. is very different. And the way that you would communicate to build content and relate and resonate with these audiences is very different. So in your marketing strategy, you would be building that into your content strategy, your targeting. If you're, on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, creating content, recipe content, for example. So what desserts or food you can make with Peanut Butter and Co. peanut butter. You would create a recipe that's like full of energy for the bodybuilders. Mm-hmm. But then for the vegans, you would, create a very nutritious meal that, aligns with their way of eating. So, lots of content ideas there. There's influencers in each one of those audience categories. Whether it's a paid engagement or not, the niche influencers that we were talking about before, that just gives you a target list of the people that your social media manager should be engaging with on a regular basis to build awareness and build engagement within those communities.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just nodding away here for people who are listening to this on audio. But yeah, I think it's very, very interesting. I mean, a few years ago, you know, you had a lot of influencers that came on board, and brands kind of gave them lots of kind of attention and help and everything else. But then they kind of just decided to not put any budget into their pockets, right? And so what's your view on not paying influencers for work? I personally think it's very unethical, actually.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, influencers, especially the ones that, do it full time, the lifestyle influencers, travel bloggers, all of that, they put a ton of work into building their audiences and building the trust that you're looking to use them to gain, right? So yeah. That's what you're paying for, the work that they do to build those audiences. You're not paying them for their advice or their recommendation or their review of your product. You're paying them for the work they've already done for you to be able to access something that's extremely valuable to you. And that's, their trusted audience. So I think that's where the line gets a little blurry. I think a lot of people say, if you pay an influencer, then obviously they're going to say something nice about your product, and it's a jaded opinion or something along those lines, and it gets a little unethical in that sense. Mm. But I don't see it that way. I see it as though, like I said, you're paying for the work that they've already done to create something that you're now attracted to, that you want a piece of, and you want to access their audience. So I think it's very black and white in my opinion. Influencers should definitely be compensated for the work they do.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I think certainly writing content and creating content for brands, there's a cost that's attached to that. And obviously brands always want, more and more, they're pushing for more, how do I put this? Advertorial content, yeah? So they get an influencer, they want them to write an advert, but it's like, look, an influencer does not write adverts. An influencer writes a piece of content and says, if you're interested, this is a thing that's going on right now. I recommend that you check it out. They don't push you. They don't say that it's the best thing since sliced bread,
No, exactly. They're not going to go overboard and oversell and overconvince their audience because you've paid them to do so. They're just going to say, hey, I've now partnered with so-and-so to, there's a local lifestyle or family blogger that I follow, and they got this really cool fridge. That one of those ones that has a camera in it and tells you your grocery list or something like that.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. It scans all the groceries that you have in your fridge, and then it will tell you what you're running low on. So when you're at the grocery store, you just pull out your app and it's like, oh, I'm low on milk, butter, whatever. I think my life would be a whole lot better if I had a fridge like that. I'm a terrible grocery shopper. But so she got the fridge, and obviously that's mind blowing. But so she was able to sort of tell her story in the adjustment of having such a high tech fridge. And at the end of the day, a fridge is a fridge. It's just there to keep your food cold. What are the benefits of it actually telling you the grocery list? So she was very real about sort of that sort of benefit that it was offering. And that's what you would expect out of an influencer. They're there to build awareness of whatever you're trying to sell. And she did that, but then she also sort of took on the journey of getting adjusted to this fridge, and it was very real. And that's what you should expect, not, overselling, you can't continue to live without having this fridge,
Awful. I can't stand that. But I think also they are building the market, right? And, it's like, if you grow the market, then you grow everybody's business. Yeah. So, I think we're there to build each other up, really. And I think there's so many opportunities really right now. But you mentioned something about virality when it comes to content, right? And I'd like to sort of understand a bit more about that, because you sort of said that, what we want is to have a person share a piece of content, and then obviously for that to go through his network or her network so that it gets more coverage, right? So what's the deal with that sort of thing and the segments and stuff?
Sure. So just to preface this, the idea of virality is cringeworthy to me. Anybody that comes to me and says, you know, I want to go viral. Well, it's pretty, in any marketer agency that comes to you and says that they can, they claim that they can make your stuff go viral, I'd run in the other direction. What I mean by perceived virality, and I'd love to maybe rename that just because it is, I do have to sort of explain that every time I say this. But I was talking about those high value clusters earlier. So the clusters that have a high degree of shared interest and have high interconnectivity. So using the Peanut Butter and Co. Audience as an example, for instance, the ultra running community, just as an example.
Huge.
So they were, you know, they're a subset of the running community online. Their interests in running are actually very different. Their motivations behind running, the gear that they need, you know, what they put their bodies through, their training, all of that stuff, very different than somebody that just, you know, runs three times a week, 5K So this one community within the Peanut Butter and Co. audience has that high degree of shared interest. They're interconnected. So they're following all the same things. They have very similar influencers. They read all the same publications. You know, that's where they get all their information about, you know, what gel is going to power them through, you know, the last 10K or whatever it may be, what shoes last longer, all of that stuff. And they all sort of share advice within the community, or there's lurkers, you know, like I said, the majority of people are lurkers and they're just reading what that community is saying to get the advice from the community. So what's really interesting about those communities is, like I was saying with the sports business content, you can create a piece of content. So in Peanut Butter and Co.'s example, it would be, you know, create a piece of content around how, you know, Peanut Butter and Co. Peanut Butter is empowering ultra marathoners to, you know, get through their training or whatever it might be with tasty yet powerful treats or something along those lines. So create a piece of content that resonates within the community, inject it in, and by injecting it, I mean, you know, share it on your regular channels and then use their hashtags. So, don't, you know, make sure you're using them in the right way, but a lot of communities will have the hashtags that they use regularly. I wouldn't be surprised if ultramarathoners was just that, ultramarathoner, or something that shortens marathon. So tag your content with that. It injects it into the community. And if, you know, a few people, let's say three people share it, and one person in that community sees that, you know, two of those three people share, then they're going to get on it. And then all of a sudden the people within the community see that this piece of content is being shared by a bunch of their friends or a bunch of the sort of leaders within the community. And it's perceived as viral. So it's perceived as something that they should pay attention to and something that they should read and look into. So that perception of, you know, when you see a piece of content that's shared by a lot of different people, you're seeing it over and over and over again. Eventually it grabs your attention and you sort of have that, oh, I should definitely take a look at that to see what that's all about, because all my friends and all the people I trust are sharing it, or at least a few of them are. So you can gain this perception that your content is going viral within the community.
Yeah, I mean, I think people love the idea of virality, but in practice, it very rarely happens. I mean, to get 5,000 views or 4,000 views on a LinkedIn post is very, very hard in itself. Yeah, you know, 1,000 views is kind of okay. Yeah, you know, and I suppose it just depends on who the audience is, right? Because you want the right people. I'd be happy if like 500 people who were the right audience looked at a post of mine, yeah? Because there's always this balance of you know, people, yeah? How many people do you need, yeah, to be an influencer, right? Well, you need people who certainly are interested in the topics, definitely, because anyone can do follow for follow. You can go and follow people who have follow for follow in your hashtag, in the hashtag, and they know, you know, and you know, they know, and then they follow you back, and, you know, and everyone's happy, right? But it doesn't really build value, doesn't it? It doesn't build relevance, because it's all about the relevance, isn't it? And, you know, I think it's very interesting. What you've just shared with the audience is very, very interesting. And what you did mention in your fantastic notes that you sent over to me, culture is changing faster than we can keep track, right? So obviously we've got these massive events going on in the world, and audience intelligence allows you to keep your finger on the pulse of this, right? And it must be very, very useful to keep an eye on what on earth's going on with all of the kind of craziness going on in the world right now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. For a local tech incubator, I did a little session on, they were doing this kind of recovery thing and getting a bunch of leaders in to help the incubated tech companies sort of recover and how to proceed during COVID. And so we just talked about what you can be doing today to pull yourself out of, you know, whatever setbacks you've had during the pandemic or caused by, you know, whatever your audience is going through or your business is going through during the pandemic. And in the common theme that you see across marketing leaders when it comes to that topic, recovering or marketing during a pandemic or any kind of crisis, is first of all, nobody has the playbook. Nobody can tell you exactly what to do. So just continue to be aware and learn through the process. But also empathy. You need to be empathetic to your audience.
Yeah.
So you need to understand how your audience is going through, the current situation, what's affecting them. So for instance, I'm in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We are doing really well as far as COVID goes. I don't think we have any active cases right now in our province. And we've gone 13 days without a new positive test. So we're doing really well. We're able to go to restaurants, go shopping, see our friends, all of that stuff. But I know that that's not the case in a lot of the world, and yeah. Where my clients reside, a lot of them are in California. And they're, you know, going backwards in their sort of restrictions as far as COVID goes. So their restaurants were open, but they're closing now. Obviously, they had a lot of rioting and protests and everything like that around George Floyd and Black Lives Matter that caused, you know, a lot of disruption in the city and just added on top of everything that's going on, right? Yeah. So you need to be empathetic to your audience's situation, and audience intelligence not only allows you to see, you know, who's in your audience, but also how they perceive things that are going on. So you can see how they feel about wearing a mask, because that's apparently a very controversial thing these days. You can see, what news stories they're sharing in relation to the current situation, to get sort of a pulse of how they're digesting the situation, how they're adjusting to the situation. Outside of the pandemic, you could, if we can imagine regular life again, you can use audience intelligence to understand, you know, PR crisis. So if your company goes through something, and you're seeing a ton of negative attention online, you can then understand how each one of your audience segments are digesting that news. And some will be, in that moment, you'll probably find your biggest defenders and the people that you should really be doubling down and investing in. So those are the people that are saying, you know, come on, guys, like, you have to see it from their perspective, or, you know, they're out there standing up for you and defending you in whatever sense it makes.
Definitely. Well, I think we've got to go. I've got to go because I've got a call in a minute. I'm very sorry. But I think we should definitely do another interview in maybe a couple months' time to top off what I've actually started, which is this big, long series. And thanks to audience for making it all possible. And, fantastic. We will drop a link somewhere around for that. And also to your business as well. I'll drop a link in there. So how do people find you, India?
So the business is just porttac.co. You can find me on Twitter, India AM, or India White on LinkedIn. Pretty easy to find me.
Super. Well, thanks ever so much.
Thanks for listening.
please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.